NBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth.
Ahoy, friends, and thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. It has been a wonderful week, and you are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 12, Episode 26, Family Ties. This week, Bob tied up the loose ends from the Javier and Jacob circle. We heard interviews from Javier's mother, Jacob's mother, and Jacob's twin brother. We have a ton of great listener questions, as always, and I'm joined by Bob and Janet. And if you haven't heard the news, or you've been living under a rock, we have a phenomenal update from our Season 1 case that we'll get into right after this break.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that he did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just Say You're Sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. It's a little late by the time you're hearing this, but we definitely have incredible reason to celebrate, because on Monday, I'm sure all of you know, but Adnan Syed was freed from prison. It was amazing. I was group texting with these guys, because Janet didn't want to get on the Zoom that I did. I might have forgotten.
Go on. About it. Don't let me interrupt you. I'm so sorry I interrupted you.
Man, what a great week. And a lot of you guys know, just spur of the moment, because I was going nuts Monday waiting for results from the hearing. I opened up a Zoom. I just put a link on the Facebook chat, hoping maybe a couple people would come hang out with me, because I was by myself, and it filled up with 100 people immediately. We did a YouTube Live. The video of that, if you want to see myself and 100 of my best friends all reacting to the news when we found out.
100% excluding Janet and myself.
Correct.
Right. Well, you guys were...
We're not his best friends.
Yeah. I said 100 of my best friends. But that is on our YouTube channel. You can watch that. If you'd like to, because after, I think it was your idea, Jan, somebody had said, well, why don't you, or maybe it might have been Teresa Dunn, said, can you put it on YouTube? So like an hour and a half into us on the Zoom, I just clicked the one button it took to stream that on YouTube. Then another 500 or so more people joined in at that point. So,
and in all seriousness, awesome. Yeah, I was very, very bitter and jealous, but on the upside, it was so fun seeing so many names I know. I got to see what a bunch of people look like whose names I've seen or who I've chatted with in YouTube. It was really, really cool. There were just a lot of people I recognized, and that was really fun. It was very moving.
Yeah, it was. I was so glad I did it. Jillian Pensavalli from True Crime Obsessed hopped on there too, so she was on there with me, who now Janet is threatening to make her replace her on our show.
Zach and I just assumed that Jillian would start hosting the follow-up, and that he and I would go off and start our own sad podcast.
back to Truth and Just Us.
That's right. Yeah.
No, I love you guys way too much, but I was glad Jillian was there. That was super cool.
No, it was great. It was great.
Incredibly emotional. As I was just saying earlier, I was reading live tweets from Lee Sanderlin, who was in the media room at the courthouse as they were happening, and obviously lost it pretty hard when he said that she overturned the conviction, and sent shivers down my spine when I read the tweet that the judge has ordered the bailiff to remove his shackles. Almost made me cry again right there.
Yeah,
it was amazing
too.
Thinking about it. What an amazing thing. And so with that being said, there are, I know we have a lot of questions about Adnan. We also have a lot of questions about our current case. So I think, Janet, the way you've got it formatted is we're going to cover the current case stuff first. And then we'll move on to the Adnan stuff, because not everyone listening is invested in Adnan's case as us. So with that, we'll let you get right into before we get into questions, I want to ask you guys what you guys thought, if we can kind of reset our brains to this case.
Sure.
What'd you think of these interviews, Zach?
I loved the way Bonnie came out hot. on LeClaire.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like I know her. She reminds me so much of so many of my friends' moms and like so many of my teachers growing up in Tucson, Arizona. Like, I'm so familiar with that, like, I hate to say mama bear, but like, I'm very familiar with that. And that's like something I felt very warm about. And I know not everyone felt that way, but I was like,
I know that wasn't supposed to be the takeaway, but like, I really appreciate like when she came out.
It was
like
just nice to hear somebody make fucking LeClaire take a step back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she was like the first person that was just not taking his shit. And whether that's just because she's the mama bear or because of her position as an assemblywoman, whatever the reason was, she had the confidence to put him in his place, which was just nice to hear, because he's, I think he's awful. That's the way I think he's pretty bad. Don't like. Speaking of which, by the way, I'm still trying to work this out for this week's episode, but I want to think there are a couple people, Chris Dolan, specifically, along with several other listeners mentioned in the fan page, they wanted to hear Javier's fourth interview. And I swear, I the week that we went to Memphis, I swear I put out all of his interviews. This whole time I thought that I did. And I went and looked, and I didn't actually play his fourth interview, which is like a 12, 13 minute. And it's LeClaire trying to get him to take a polygraph again. But there is some information in there, so I'm glad they like directed me to it, because I thought we had covered it and I'd moved on from it. Hadn't. I don't think I had even heard it before. So point being, I'm either going to fit that into this week's episode because there's some relevant information there to what we're going to be talking about this week, or if not, I will get that out as a bonus in the next week for you guys to hear, because it's an important one. So I want to thank all of you listeners for always, you know, throwing me things like that, because again, I had moved on from that.
So the other quick sentiment I took away was honestly from Jacob's mother. You know, she felt very concerned for his mental health with everything he had been through.
Right.
And I think that was big for me to pick that up. Like, I didn't feel as she was protecting him from the case as she was protecting him for his mental health.
Yeah. Yeah. I got the exact same thing. And I thought that was interesting to hear, even though it was short. But to hear how he reacted to to finding this out and this happening to him, because, you know, my impression of him prior to hearing Austin talk about how broke up he was, that he moved away, and then his mom saying he had, an emotional breakdown afterwards, you know, so we've heard it from several people now.
Well, and he found his aunt.
Yeah. His favorite
something,
aunt.
Yeah. Rough. You feel bad for the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think, Janet?
I thought there was some really great information in there. I thought it was interesting that the way Rolando described the sequence of events was most closely matched to the way Austin kind of remembered it. He was the only other person that sort of was close to Jacob, like kind of the closest to Jacob in all of this going on, who also had this kind of perception of, I remember he was trying to get a hold of her and he was worried and he said something didn't feel right. And so to me, that kind of seemed to corroborate like whatever Austin and Jacob and Rolando's memories and experiences of it were kind of lived in that space. And that's also kind of what Jacob said in his police interviews, that he, you know, whether or not the timing matches out perfectly, this idea of like, why am I not hearing back from her? Why am I not hearing back from her? So I thought that was really interesting.
And it's interesting too, and that's some of the stuff we're going to cover this weekend on Sunday's episode. But again, it sounds like the not being able to get a hold of her was in the days. Did you get that impression too, that he's talking about the days?
It's what it sounded
leading
like
up to the murder.
Yeah, it sounded like he was saying when he was at his house, he was even saying that, like when he was in Costa Mesa. So that's interesting. I don't know exactly what it means, but it was kind of good to hear that after Austin's later interview, because it did sort of feel like, oh, okay, well, however that exists, it sort of exists of a piece with those two or three guys. Well, we've got plenty of great questions to get into, so I'm happy to jump in if
Let's
you guys
do it.
Are. Okay, cool. Well, first we'll start with Kristen H., who says, thanks for the Patreon behind-the-scenes video. I laughed a lot. Loved seeing the baby quails. So shout out to Kristen for enjoying the mayhem of last week's follow-up episode. It's a lot of fun.
So for those of you that aren't on the Patreon, it's $5 a month. You get all the episodes ad-free, which is a big benefit, and you get an hour-long video pre-show before the follow-ups.
Last week got out of hand.
Well, we were having all kinds of, which, by the way, for you patrons, too, you should know that some of the money we get from Patreon is in my October budget I have in to replace all of this equipment in here with the Patreon funds, because we were having all kinds of technical difficulties, and it keeps happening. And so when I, in the midst of me having kind of a fit about that, we ended up doing a tour of the whole office studio, the bird pen outside. Zach got attacked by a pheasant.
Uh-huh. It was action-packed.
Yeah.
It was action-packed. And then she goes on to say, also, I'm glad you gave us the three interviews from the mamas and the brother. Did you find it interesting that Bonnie skirted around the question as to where Javier was after she dropped him off at Walmart? She didn't mention the whole time he was driving up around Becky's house.
I noticed it, but the thing is, she only knows what Javier told her, right? Because she wasn't with him, as far as, you know, what he did after that. But I would have thought that that would have come up from him to her, but it really, to me, didn't seem like it was her focus. I think she was more, I certainly didn't get the impression from her that she thinks her son has anything to do with this. The impression I got from her was that she was pissed off at these people for coming to her house, and, you know, she's in an election year and people are now starting rumors wanting to know why the cops are at her house.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I just want to acknowledge, Nicole, I just saw your chat about not being able to get through the Rolando interview. She says it sounded like the microphone was in a potato chip bag. Fair enough. Fair enough. There were definitely a lot of rustling moments where we're all sort of going, wow, that's loud in my ear. And what is happening? So appreciate you giving that summary at the top, Bob, too, in case people were like, I can't do this.
Yeah. And that's why I did that. Also, again, there wasn't a whole lot of really important information I needed to listen to. But yeah, as a podcaster, somebody that works in audio all the time, I find myself screaming in a lot of these police interviews. And you forget, like, they're just, it's probably a microphone that's on their vest or their belt or something. I'm like, idiot, stop scratching your chest. You're scratching the microphone.
Yeah.
Like, you can hear what they're doing when they do some of that stuff. But
yeah,
it is what it is.
Okay, next is from Jason says, it was very clear that LeClaire acted like a freshly neutered puppy around Bonnie. When was this interview? Was this before he settled on his gay theory or after? He definitely didn't have the stones to ask Mama Bear.
It was kind of right in the middle of it. This was October 5th. So Javier was interviewed on the 25th. So he interviewed at the scene on the 18th. He was interviewed on the 25th. I'm trying to remember when Corey Donovan's interview, some of the interviews where he starts asking the gay questions. But they were right in that time frame. The 5th actually, so the interview you did hear back in episode 13 or whatever it was, where they were at Javier's work and were asking him about taking a polygraph. That was also October 5th. So I don't know. So it was the same day. That interview was the same day as this interview with Bonnie. And I don't know timing wise, which was first or second.
I think the way that I took it was Javier's interview was first because Bonnie asks about that, about like, why were you looking for him? He's like, oh, I found him at work and we talked to him.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
So I do think that that's more, I mean, it became first.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
That makes sense. I couldn't remember.
Nice catch, Zach.
Because it's been 2 weeks since I listened to it. But yeah, so she said, so they talked to Javier at work. They missed a call from Bonnie and then they came back and then called Bonnie back. And that's what you heard.
Gotcha. And just, I picked Jason's because his choice of words made me giggle. But there were a lot of people who definitely noticed that it sort of seemed like maybe LeClaire was tempted to ask and kind of danced around it. So shout out to all of you who noticed that and called it out. Nicole says, it seemed to me that Javi's mom played more of a friend role to her son and his friends. The fact that his mom was so invested in what Becky was or wasn't doing with her son was a little eyebrow raising for me. That being said, I'm not saying Javi had anything to do with the crime, but when you have an adult that has clearly been overly involved in their kid's life, you have to question whether she would be truthful or say what she needed to say to protect her son.
She seemed like she was being pretty honest to me because, I mean, I think anybody listening could tell, like, she wasn't really mincing words. Like, the impression I got was that she didn't care for Becky, or at least didn't care for Becky being around her house and around her son all the time. If you notice, she never says her name.
Yeah.
I can't say never because you might have, but I remember listening, noticing that it's always that girl.
Well, yeah.
That girl.
That's definitely come up in the chat as well. A couple of different folks did not necessarily care for that, and I totally hear that.
But I don't think she was totally playing the friend. I think she had a good balance because she talked about like letting the friends stay and doing all this, but she's like, I wouldn't let them party here.
Yeah.
She's like, but it also sounded like there's points where she was saying like, I'm not stupid. They're probably partying somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she's totally playing that best friend role that some people might think she's playing to Javier.
She is to me. I mean, I could see myself in her a lot with my kids, you know, for my older, you know, I've got a senior in high school. I have rules. We just talked about some of it in the Patreon thing. You know, I definitely have rules. We'll crack down when I need to, but also I'm pretty flexible with my kids and my kids are able to talk to me about stuff, which, it's hard to find that. You'll know when your kids get a little older, when they get to be teenagers, it's really hard to find that balance where they still respect you as a parent, but also feel comfortable talking to you about important things. So yeah, and she seems like she's right there. So from the impression I got from her anyway.
Yeah, and just to name you guys, Lauren and Hannah and Joanne. I going back to the that girl thing. You know, I mean, it did seem to me. You know, I think she was very forthcoming with that she was like, I didn't approve. And so I think that sort of was maybe a reason that if she falls into the that girl category is, you know, thinking about her as a mom going, you know, okay, so my son has a crush on this girl. This girl knows that my son has a crush on her. They're sleeping in the same bed together. She's told me, yes, I know your son has a crush on me, but I don't want that. Like, you know, I think I'm sure she wouldn't have wished anything horrible like that on anyone. But it's almost like she's separating her as she's talking about it and she's thinking about those things. That's when the sort of protective, like, I don't care for that. Like, I don't care for that girl.
Right.
Maybe, you know, feeling protective of her son. But it's not ideal in the circumstances of what happened that, you know, there's still sort of a feeling of maybe resentment or something. But again, she reminds me so much of friends of mine who, you know, it's like, yeah, come over to my house, party here. Don't do something somewhere else. I want to know that you're here. I don't approve, but I know you're going to do it. So why don't you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like that felt very familiar to me.
Right.
Caroline says, while Bonnie Garcia's interview seems to match with Javi's recount of his day earlier, she wasn't home, so she can't say what he did that night except from what he told her. Do you think her campaign had anything to do with why Javi wasn't spoken to again after additional interviews were taken where people kept saying to talk to Javi? If there was a sense of like, let's just keep this on the down low. This is a tense time of year. We don't need any trouble. Or, I mean, I think that's what Caroline's kind of saying.
No, I think Javi had to do with that. So the interview that I'm going to put, so Javi was interviewed again on the 18th, the 25th, and the 5th. You've heard all of those. His final interview was on the 10th, 5 days later, and we hear a very different Javier in that interview as far as his attitude towards LeClaire. And it's pretty clear after that interview that he's done talking to them.
Got it. Jill F. says, observations. Javi's mom says she thinks Javi, Becky, and friends went to Del Taco for lunch on Sunday. I think crime scene photos show a Del Taco cup in Becky's car. 2, Jacob's mom says his favorite aunt died 2 weeks after Becky. Jacob's brother said favorite aunt died about 1 year after Becky, which is a big difference from 2 weeks.
Yeah, the Del Taco thing, I mean, it's a good... They're both good observations. As far as the timing of when the aunt died, I don't think there's anything to fear. Remember, this is 10 years later.
Right.
So and Rolando is not friends with Becky, you know, so that wasn't a significant, you know, for him, I could see him like lumping together. This happened about a year apart. Whereas like for Jacob or his mom that was, you know, closer to them, it was more significant. The time frame would have been more significant for them, but good observations. I don't think that it's anything for us to worry about.
Yeah. I thought the Del Taco thing was interesting. Just the sort of like, oh, maybe that confirms that exact, you know, place and time.
I'm loving where we're at right now. And I want to shout out Teresa Dunn, who I mentioned last week, I think that has been going through the phone records I have them now and I'm reviewing them. I'm going to get into them in this week's episode. And we're kind of going back and forth about cleaning things up for how they can be published. But She's put together 65 pages of phone records.
Amazing.
But it's like it's like this moment where we've got all these interviews, we've got all these accounts and all these hypotheses and theories about who was doing what when. And like now we have this account of the phone activity from Tuesday all the way on through the murders. And we're starting in. It's neat because you're able to like confirm like, well, Javier said that he was with Becky on. I'm throwing a random example that's made up, but he was with Becky on Wednesday night. And you can look at the phone records like, oh, well, they were texting and calling back and forth on it. And then after 6 o'clock, she's using her phone and Javier's, but they're not talking to each other. So that adds up that they were together and, you know, they went to Sky Valley to get the phone and you can see the gap. Like you can start to like see where these things can be verified and pieced together based on the phone records now.
That's amazing. Teresa, you're awesome.
Yeah. And the Del Taco thing is like, that's what reminded me of it. Cause it's like, okay, well she said they went to Del Taco and it's like, oh, but, and we saw a Del Taco cup in her car. So that part, we're starting to you know, what's nonsense? What can we rule out? And what is reality?
Right. Orpheus says, does this mean Jacob's brother, one, never confirmed timeline that Jacob was visiting, and two, provided insight into Jacob's state of mind between Thursday and Sunday? And to piggyback off the second point, would have been nice to know if Jacob really was telling people they were broken up or not in those days, or if maybe he thought the relationship still had a chance or was still alive.
I'm not sure I understand.
I think the question part. Yeah, the first one is just like, okay, so they talked to him so late that he couldn't really help with the what nights was he actually there. That was sort of like a lost cause because they didn't bother following up on that in the first place.
Yes.
And then also like, and yet we have Rolando saying kind of what we talked about earlier, which is like, but he was really worried. I do remember that he was worried. He was worried about not hearing back from Becky. And then, you know, he just sort of like, and that sort of sent him to the place of like, gosh, it would have been nice to know if he was actually telling people that they were broken up, as we've heard, or if he wasn't telling people that and only Javi was telling people that.
Yeah, I say because we heard it again from Bonnie, who said that they had, you know, they had broken up right before. But again, Bonnie's source of intel from that would probably come from Javier.
Right. Sarah KM says, I mentioned this in another post, but when LeClaire asked Bonnie if any of Javi's friends drove a truck, her immediate response was, what color? Any thoughts on this? Seemed a little strange, especially since apparently the only friend with a truck was Corey. Why not just say that? Why not just answer simply with that?
Yeah, I don't know. It was an interesting way to respond to that instead of just saying, yes, they have a, you know, Corey has a truck, instead of like going the kind of roundabout way, like what color. And you wonder how much, you know, I don't know how much interaction she has with her ex-husband who's got connection to the case and how much information is filtered from Javi Sr. to Javi Jr. to her. Or if, you know, we don't have much of a baseline with Bonnie to know, like, is that kind of her? Would that be a typical, you know, give me more detailed type of response? Or, yeah, so I don't know if it means anything.
Gotcha. Soledad, really tried to not butcher Soledad's beautiful name and instead absolutely butchered it. Soledad said, who do we think was calling and leaving messages for Jacob's mom? She kept asking the cop if he was the one that had been calling her, and he said no one from the sheriff's department had tried to contact her in years. Yeah, I was a little confused by that. You know, I don't know if it means anything, but I was confused by that, too, because at first it sounded like someone had just been calling her a bunch, but then it sounded like maybe she was talking about a year before that or something.
There is a lot of overlap we're hearing. So think like the 2015 Nick Crum interviews when he's like, well, somebody was talking to me. What it was is the there were defense investigators working on the case at the same time that the sheriff's department was working on it. And Ron Friedley had hired a private investigator. So, you know, once the Robert and Christian had the charges dropped and had been released and they were working on building another case, so they had their defense was tracking things down. I think the Friedley's PI was still trying to figure things out, and the police were. So I'd assume it's a PI from either the defense or from Ron Friedley.
Yeah, I kind of thought that might be the case. Rachel L. and some other folks had a question regarding Jacob's mom interview. In the recording, it sounded like they were arranging to fully interview her the following day. Do we know if that happened? Did you say something about that earlier?
I didn't. Okay. But no, I don't. As far as I know, that interview never happened. That was the end of that contact.
Hmm.
And we get a little context, too, when he's talking to Austin and I think it was just Austin, maybe somebody else, when they're saying that, yeah, we'd love to. Or I guess it was with Rolando, too, where they're saying, yeah, we'd love to talk to Jacob, but there's a barrier there. And from my understanding, the barrier is that just what his mom said, like, if you have a subpoena, we'll talk to you. He's got an attorney and he ain't talking. And they never pursued that.
Yeah, that's actually a question that I have from Karen, who was a little curious about that. And just I'll say before I read this, just wanting to be sensitive to, you know, everything that sort of surrounds this question and what you just brought up. But what did you think of Jacob's mother using the word recovery when saying Jacob was recovering from some sort of breakdown? She was reluctant to comment on it and then said recovery, which sounds to Karen more like an addiction issue than a psychological issue.
I don't want to speculate on it because I almost cut some of that stuff out. And had she given a diagnosis at all, I would have cut it out.
I was actually shocked that he asked that. That was like, I don't know why, but it was so brazen and it was such a thing that like, I guess you got to try, but it was such a HIPAA violation. Like everything about it just felt like, whoa. Don't ask that.
And good for Jacob's mom.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
100%.
That's private.
When he said that, you know, does he have diagnosis? And she said, that's private.
Yeah.
Like good for her because that's, you know, even if we want more information, I'm always actually happy to see someone who is doing the things that we try to teach people to
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said it. I mean, I said it earlier. I don't necessarily feel like she was protecting Jacob from this case. I think she was protecting his mental
Jacob.
Health.
She was protecting Jacob. Yeah. I think that's so true, Zap. I'm so glad you said that because it was really good to hear from his mom and to hear from his brother because, you know, as many people have mentioned and in the follow up and elsewhere, of course, we do have this impression of Jacob from his own behavior in the interviews that he was really chill about it or that he seemed nonchalant or, you know, friends who said, oh, he didn't seem bothered by it. And then we have his family members saying, no, he had a very strong reaction to the combination of that and what happened with his aunt. And, you know, it really puts into perspective, like, you know, sometimes people can't express their feelings or they choose not to or they're uncomfortable about it. But sometimes that means you're bottling it up even more. And then when it does come out, it's you don't know how to handle it and stuff. So that made me feel a lot of compassion for him, too. And it kind of serves as a good springboard for, again, us just kind of check in with the idea of the fact that there are people who do survive in one way or another situations like this and are potentially re-traumatized by being approached by it, being asked to talk about it. And that doesn't mean that you don't want to do a good job and investigate and follow up. But we hear with this that it's possible that, you know, he's going to reignite some of that anxiety or that sadness or the depression by talking about it. So I don't know. I just thought it was a good way of reminding all of us, you know, yeah, like people get re-traumatized by stuff when it's dug into again,
sure.
You know. No more intel at all on the Marine Becky was dating. A couple folks just wanted to circle back on that since we heard it, as you said,
nothing
in the episode
but,
from
but
Bonnie.
It was important to me to hear, you know, because that was when Robert mentioned, I think there was a Marine, and then some other people were saying, no, there was no Marine. And there was kind of, you know, that was looked on, I think, negatively about Robert, that he was like making up some imaginary person to try. But according to Bonnie, who said she heard from Becky herself, that she was in fact dating a Marine. So that's at some point. And that's just, and that's all we know. We don't know any more details about it. I read somewhere in the case file that the Marine's name was Dane. I can't remember where that came from. Hmm. But that's I haven't seen anything else to verify or get any more information about him. But to me it's worth noting that she was in fact dating a Marine, according to Bonnie, who said she heard that directly from Becky.
Got it. Sarah G was just kind of thinking about, you know, this idea of where Becky was staying and did she have a regular couch circuit? You know, were those the only two places she stayed? I think we do know that she also stayed at Claire's, right? And, you know, was just trying to figure out, like, if she was maybe doing it to avoid home or if it really was just a matter of convenience and sort of safety working those late nights. I would just add to that that, you know, here we have Bonnie saying that Becky was over there a lot. So it sounds like she didn't say, and then that stopped once Becky was dating Jacob. So I don't know. It sounds like maybe they weren't necessarily always at Jacob's or, you know.
Yeah. And I had a hard time kind of parsing through that when she was, you know, because we talked about this last week about, you know, she was basically living with Jacob.
Yeah.
But then after that, she was with Javier. She obviously spent some time and nights with Javier. So I wish they would have asked a little bit more. I guess maybe they felt they didn't have a reason to, but like, was this more recent? Was it just in the last week or that she was like spending the night at your house? Cause she said that she pointed out that she was there spending the night on Saturday night. Which to me was where a lot of the, it's like how much of these feelings and stuff that she had going on all came from her, like coming home on Sunday morning and being like, God, why is she here spending the night?
But I remember being that age and I never spent the night at home.
Right.
Like around that time frame, you're always going. You're always doing something. You're hanging out with somebody. You're at your girlfriend's. Yeah. You're at a buddy's.
Yeah.
You're at wherever.
But it seemed like she the impression I get is that she had moved in. I'm doing air quotes, moved in with Jacob, where she was basically, but she was like nothing was official. Like I'm thinking like maybe she has her toothbrush and her stuff there. And that's kind of her like main headquarters. But she also spends the night a lot at her friend Claire's house, sometimes at Javier's house. And I don't know that it doesn't seem like based on phone records. So you see a lot of communication back and forth with her house. I don't think it was because she had an issue with her house.
Mm-hmm.
It was just that's where her boyfriend lived. That's where her friends lived. Mm-hmm. That's where her work was. So she pretty much stayed down there.
Side note, I moved in with my wife like that. Like she had an apartment in her friends and I was just there all the time. And they're like, you might as well just say you live here and pay a little bit of the rent and make it easier on everybody.
And that's how he tricked Michelle into marriage.
I shouldn't have laughed at that. That was cruel
$25 a month in rent.
Yeah. that's all I have for the current case episode. Everything from here on out is Adnan.
Okay, well, let's do it.
Okay. Well, many, many folks were just kind of touching base on the Facebook page to follow up to see how they could continue to support Adnan. There are a few different places you can go. You can go to the follow-up post on the Facebook page, because a couple of fine folks provided, I think, some links. Is there anywhere else we can send? Certainly, Rabia has tweeted about it. Rabia. Yeah, she's got stuff up there.
Yeah. There are two places,
and Patreon.
I would say, what's that?
Oh, I said and Patreon. That's where I do like $25 of something like for just towards Adnan's legal stuff. So you can do it on Patreon as well.
Yeah. Right now, Rabia is putting out. I just saw this morning she put out on thing like Instagram and Twitter. There were links. There's one link where you can donate money to help Adnan transition back to home. As we know from Ed 8, there's a lot of expense to that. And then there's another link to buy shirts and merchandise that say, I think, hashtag we freed Adnan. And both of those are the best places. According to Rabia, those are the best places to go to help support him.
Perfect. A lot of other folks had the same thought I had, which if you listened to the end of last week's follow up after the credits, I was like, this has to be Colin's bombshell. This has to be the bombshell. If you're a listener to Undisclosed, you know that Colin's been holding onto a bombshell for what feels like 10 years. Rabia did a Instagram live on that same day when we recorded. So it was last Wednesday. And she said none of it was Colin's bombshell. Someone asked in that chat, and she said none of it's Colin's bombshell. So, y'all, I don't know what this bombshell is, but one day we'll know. Rabia promised, she said, one day when this is all squared away, we promise we'll tell you everything. We'll tell you what we couldn't say at the time, including the bombshell.
Yeah. This was a surprise to Rabia and everyone. Like, I don't think they may have had a little more heads up than the general public did, but I think maybe hours or a day when the motion was filed. Like, this was something Marilyn Mosby's office did on their own, which speaks volumes to what just happened here for the Anonymous Guilty crowd. I had some jackass tweeted at me or messaged me something. She's like, you're so ignorant. Obviously he's guilty. I thought you were smarter than that.
Boy.
And I was just like, right. Yeah. Yeah. Too bad I'm not as smart as you to figure this out. I'm sure you know much better than the fucking prosecutor who has the entire case file
right.
and thinks that he should go free. Sorry, that's my little rant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Appreciate that.
It's yeah. merited.
Don't come at me with that shit. I'm in a new place in my life where just tell you to go fuck yourself.
That's right.
He sure is.
I've been getting some of that too. And it's like, it rolls off so quick. It's so nice when you just are positive. Like when you're just like, no, like, I got nothing for you. There's just no, doesn't bother me. Kristen says, what does house detained mean? How long is that in effect?
30 days. So he was sent home house detained, which I assume means ankle bracelet. Basically he was released without bail on his own recognizance. I haven't seen or heard the details of his house detained. But typically that would mean like an ankle bracelet. But they have, as of right now, Adnan, the conviction has been vacated, but he is still charged with the crime. So if we're looking at a timeline, like if you go back in the Wayback Machine and we rewind, so where he's at right now is after he's been arrested, but hasn't been tried yet. Now, back in 1999, he did not get bail, and he was serving that time. He was spending that time in jail. So that's where he is, legally speaking, where he's at right now, is he's still charged with the crime and hasn't been tried yet. The state has 30 days to either put in for a trial date to retry him, and if they are not prepared to do that within 30 days, then they have to drop the charges, which would take him back to the place as though he had never even been arrested for this. However, and I'll break, and this may be answering some of the coming questions, mm-hmm. so you understand. I'll put it all together here to understand the process. If that happens, if they drop the charges, that does not mean that they can't recharge him later. So they could, you know, he's free and clear. They have no hold over him. They have no way to detain him. He is not charged. He's just a free man. And on his record, it looks as though he has never even been charged with this crime. But if they found new evidence, they could recharge him at that point and then have 30 days to get a trial scheduled. Some people were asking me about like double jeopardy, but it's not double jeopardy because the procedure that just went through has made it as though the first two trials, because remember there was a mistrial, as though the trials it never happened. They don't exist. It's taken us all the way back.
Other than, you know, spending over two decades in prison.
Yeah, 23 years in prison. But just legally speaking. And then as far as, and of course, a lot of people are asking, will they try him again? I'm sure with some of these questions, we'll get into like talking some nitty gritty details. But at a basic standpoint, I would say there is zero possibility they're going to try him again. Because remember, they had a very weak case against him to begin with. But the case was built upon Jay Wilds saying that he saw the body in the trunk and helped Adnan bury the body, gave this account of how, when, and where they went that day and how they did it. And that was supposedly corroborated by the cell phone records. That's all they had on Adnan. Now, there's all the stuff we knew. So first of all, those couple things. One, Jay will never testify again. First of all, I don't think that he would, and I don't think anybody would attempt to have him testify again because his story had changed multiple times before the trial. His story has now changed since the trial in his Intercept interview, and he even had made comments to Amy Berg that Ritson McGillivray made him say things. So all that is out there and all would be impeachable evidence coming to trial. So Jay's out. So you don't have a witness saying anything about seeing him or helping him. The cell phone records have been deemed to be completely unreliable and can't be used. So they would have to try him with no cell phone records and no Jay, which means there's no case. Now, if they found new evidence or something, that would be part of it. But based on what they have now, they also would, the defense would be now armed with all of the hard work that Rabia and Susan and Colin and so many of you guys have all done. There's all this new evidence, Neo, like we have verified with 100% certainty that Coach Tsai absolutely alibis Adnan. You know, we've gone through the historical weather data and we know that there was exactly one day during Ramadan where Adnan would have been fasting that was over 50 degrees where they had practice. And that was the day of the murders. All the things that was done to break down the Nisha call. The Nisha calls out, which people still like to quote that to me, and also go fuck yourself. If you want to talk to me about the Nisha call.
Those are just people who listen to Serial, and that was it, I think.
Yeah. It's all this stuff has been discredited. So as far as where things stand now, in my opinion, there is zero possibility that Adnan would get retried. Yeah. And I got more I could ramble about, but I want to see where the questions are so we can direct them towards those questions.
Sure. However, I just want to add, that is an awesome thing that the prosecution did, because they didn't have to list all of those things in their petition. And right. The fact that we are now armed with, even if, you know, she leaves office and the incoming prosecutor's like, no, I actually do want to try him. Like, it looks so bad for them that their own office said, let's go ahead. Like, it was such a gift. It was such a gift. And they knew exactly what they were doing. You know, they knew that they were saying, no, we're going to pack everything in here so that you got nothing if you disagree with us and you want to go forward with this. We're going to go ahead and cut all of the legs out from under this. It's so great.
Yeah, because starting in January, the new DA will take over. But yeah, she has set it up to where and this is not like cheating. What she did was make clear and put on the record, like, hey, new prosecutor, if you want to try him, you're going to do it fair.
Yes.
And you're going to do it by the book, and you're not going to use all this bullshit to try him again.
Yes.
And that was is amazing that she did that. And are there any questions in there? Because somebody mentioned in the chat that I want to talk about a little bit at some point. Does anybody have any questions about what the attorney general said?
Let me just make sure. There definitely was something. I just wanted to make sure. I can't remember if it's in here or not. Why don't you go ahead and address it now, and I'll shout it out as I scroll down.
Brian Frosch from the Attorney General's office, which is who had the file, had the case file for these last 7 years. And oh man, in the press conference was Marilyn Mosby throwing shade at them, and without naming names, at them, at Thiru Vignaraja, who is the one that was prosecuting the post conviction hearings. But Brian Frosch from the Attorney General said this is all grossly misstated.
Mm-hmm.
All of this evidence was available to the defense to review at any time. Like basically saying, like, how dare you say we hid this? But that is absolute bullshit, because the defense, the Attorney General's office, did let the defense view the case file. Susan Simpson was there with them. They went through every single page of it. And that this information was not there. Someone had pulled it out.
Yeah.
When they viewed it, when they reviewed the case file. And it sounds like, which I did get to, and I'm sure we have questions about Serial too. Sarah Koenig with Serial did put out an update episode, and she gave information that I hadn't heard yet. So I'm guessing it must have come from Mosby. But she said this information about these suspects were handwritten notes by the police that were in the file. And again, Susan said those were not in there before.
Right. Mm. Yes. Marianne and many other folks are curious about whether Adnan is going to have, once this piece of it is sort of over, if they don't renew charges, or if if they drop the charges, what has to happen for Adnan to be able to sue the state of Maryland for wrongful conviction? Is that an option? Talk to us about that.
I think it's an option. It goes state by state, but there are federal statutes. I think it's the 1983 is the type of lawsuit they call it. Typically, you have to be proven actually innocent. If they drop the charges on him, I don't know, because he's kind of in limbo there, right? Because like they've dropped charges on him, but they haven't declared him actually innocent. Maybe at that point he could. Now, if an arrest is made and somebody else is convicted and he's proven to be actually innocent, then I would think for sure at that point he could.
And that's really a lot of the other kind of chatter that we're all speculating on is you know, do they know more? And I see this in here, Teresa and some of y'all, that, you know, everybody's kind of going, well, they sure gave a lot of information in that petition, but is it possible they're holding back even more? And are they closer to knowing who did it than they are letting on? And could they make an arrest of someone, like, perhaps even within the 30 days that they have the decision that they can make about Adnan? It's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I suspect they've got a pretty damn good idea who did it.
I sure hope so.
Yeah. And with along the lines of the handwritten note, Orpheus in the chat, in the YouTube chat, said they didn't think that handwritten notes had to be included or is it dependent on state jurisdiction. It doesn't matter what the medium is. Information has to be included. What we learned from the handwritten notes is that the police knew about this information. The police knew that I'll just give it. None of this. This is just my interpretation of the motion. I think it's pretty clear that Alonzo Sellers, Mr. S, is one of the suspects, and that's just from me. That's not coming from anybody else.
Yeah.
You have the person that found the body, and it doesn't say exactly who's tied to what thing,
right?
But it sounded like it seemed to me they were saying that he had a motive to kill Hay, and he threatened to kill Hay and make her disappear. If not, it's the other suspect who I'm also 98% sure I know who that is too.
Yeah, that's out there by a lot of different people have said.
I think it's Bilal is the other person who I don't think has any connection to the crime, but the definitely stuff was withheld from them. But the point being, the police knew the person who found the body and failed the polygraph had a motive to kill, and what the motion says is means, motive, and opportunity to kill, and had threatened her. That information, whether it's a handwritten note or a typed up report or whatever, that information had to be turned over to the defense, and it never was.
Right. The who threatened to kill her is, I will be very glad when we have a definitive answer on that. That is so troubling and so shocking that was just in there. was in there. Oh, Baltimore, bless. Okay. Of course, people are wondering if this just means that, you know, another person that you've always felt deeply needed more looking into as much as possible would be Dawn, and whether or not any of this negates that. I think you've already kind of publicly on the YouTube even said, like, I don't think it negates him at all. Am I right about that?
Yeah. So and that's only because we don't have enough information. So we know, based on what the Marilyn Mosby's filings, or her office's filings, that the police knew that someone told them that one of these suspects had a motive to kill Hay and had threatened her. If those things are true, so there's two different levels here. Those are absolutely Brady violations. That is information that the defense could have used and would have used to present a defense against this. That, hey, why are you looking at him when we have this information, this person's over here? Whether that means they actually are the persons responsible is a completely separate issue. And I don't have enough information to know. Like, I don't know what was the motive. You know, could it be just that, you know, could it be Bilal and has something to do with a non-dating someone who wasn't Muslim? I have no idea what that is. So I haven't seen enough information about the two suspects for me to say, oh, well, then it must not have been, you know, someone else, anyone else. And as you guys know very publicly, I've always thought that Don needed a much closer look. I think it's very clear on the record that he and his mom and stepmom took active steps to create an alibi for him, to falsify time cards for him. He was unreachable until after 1 o'clock in the morning that night. There's all these reasons. So to me, like, yeah, I've never accused him or said he did it. But to me, yeah, he still remains a suspect for me in my mind until I see evidence that someone else did it. Right. So no, it hasn't changed my opinion on that. But I am certainly very happy that if we find out here's all the evidence and the DNA comes back and it was this person over here and he had nothing to do with it, then I'm perfectly happy to concede that well, you know, there was reasons that he should have been a suspect, but he didn't do it. Just the same as these people, these two suspects, there's obviously reason for them to be suspects, but it doesn't mean that they did it.
Right. And the people in YouTube have grabbed on to your theory that perhaps it was Alonzo Sellers who threatened her. There are people like, wait, what? But just to reiterate, we don't know that. We don't know that it's him at all, because he definitely, like, there. I know we talked about this before, but he did not work at Woodlawn. We would know that. That would be like everywhere.
He worked at Copeland,
right?
University, which was close by.
So we don't know what kind of interaction they would have had for him to be making that threat.
Yeah, and the motion didn't say that. The motion was ambiguous on purpose. So it said there's these two suspects, and here are things that could be applied to either of the suspects. So we don't know. They could have been talking about Bilal. That was or whoever the other suspect is. That's who I think that the other suspect is.
Right.
But I did. I went season one, episode 32 is an episode I did on Mr. S. I think I posted a link to it as a good refresher. But I listened back to it because I couldn't remember all the because I remember at the time, and I think I said it in that episode, when he failed the polygraph, his story about finding the body doesn't make sense. Why would? But it was what I said in that episode was, at least from what we know, is that he has no connection to Hay.
Right.
No opportunity to be around Hay. So I can't see him as being a good suspect unless there's some reason why he might have had means, motive, opportunity. Now, if that exists, that would certainly change my opinion of that.
Right.
But in that episode is when I recalled it, that he didn't. I thought he was a janitor at Woodlawn. That's just what my mind did. But no, it wasn't Woodlawn. It was at the high school. It was at Copeland College, which was still right in the same neighborhood.
Gotcha. Brandy C says, will you possibly have an interview with Adnan at some point in the future?
I hope so. I've been very hands off with a lot of this. When we got the news on last Wednesday about the motion, I've been there with Ed and know how insane it is, and so much media and everybody wanted to contact. I just sent Robbie a message and said, I'm so happy. I love you. Just wanted to, you don't need to respond, whatever. And she replied back a few hours later and said, love you too. Can't wait to see it at Obsessed Fest. This is not my place right now to be adding to all of that. So I hope that, once things settle down, I would love to have Adnan on and have a conversation, but I want to give him his space. I want to give Rabia and Adnan's family their time. And I know Rabia, I'm sure, has media things going on between the podcast, and you saw in all our Insta videos that there's camera crews around. So I'm guessing they're doing an update for the documentary. So I'm just letting all that happen right now.
I'm really happy you said that, because I think a lot of people need to understand that Adnan needs time. He needs time. Like, rushing him out, I mean, this is amazing that he's free, but all these people hounding him now for interviews and wanting to see him and talk to him and take pictures with him, that's not what he needs.
Yeah.
He needs time to adjust. I mean, he's had his life taken away.
Yeah. It's exactly right. And it's my position, because I've had a lot of people have messaged me about stuff, and someone messaged me and they're like, you don't seem very excited about that. First of all, I don't do much social media. Yeah. But secondly, I'm just like, I don't see myself as in a position. This had nothing to do with me or anything that I've done. This right now, I think the focus needs to be on Adnan. It needs to be on Rabia and Susan and Colin. It needs to be on Marilyn Mosby and her amazing team that did this, and Adnan's attorneys. Like, those of you that watched the live saw how emotional I am about this, but I just really feel strongly that this is not my place to be, waving a flag saying, look at me about it. Because people were asking about, will I do an update episode? And I said, no, I'm not, because Undisclosed did an update episode. They did a very good job. All the information's there. I'm not going to do another episode recanting or restating everything they stated. Just go listen to Undisclosed and do that. It's not because I don't care. It's just because I just don't think it's my place right now to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's wonderful and totally respect that and agree. Connie says, is there any way for Kevin Urich, Greg McGillivray, and William Ritz to be held accountable for their actions?
Probably not.
Yeah.
The police and prosecutors have immunity.
Isn't Urich a judge now?
I think so.
Because if that's true, that should make you not ever sleep at night again.
Right. I hope that I had hopes that Mosby's office might file charges against them. She didn't. Maybe that's still coming, but we've seen it before. I think there was one prosecutor in Texas a few years ago that actually got convicted of prosecutorial misconduct and served 11 days in jail. The immunity is just too strong with it. I don't know if it's worth the effort. He should be disbarred. As far as him and Theroux, in my opinion, should be disbarred because Theroux should have known that stuff was in that file too. While he continued to fight against, after the cell phone evidence was proven that it should have overturned the conviction, found a way to fight it with a time barred argument, knowing full well the whole time that this information was in the file.
It's pretty slimy.
But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever see that. But in a perfect world, I think that Kevin Urich should have to serve 23 years in prison so that he can do what, because of his actions caused Adnan to serve 23 years in prison. I think a very a fair sentence for him would be for him to serve 23 years in prison. But unfortunately, it's not a perfect world.
Yeah. Aaron just had a nice comment about if Adnan ever needed advice, the idea of kind of connecting him with Ed Ates, which I thought was very sweet and lovely. The idea of
Damien too.
Yeah. Yeah. And Grayson was just, kind of, again, echoing everyone's excited. It's amazing that he's been able to walk out. Is there anything he can do to sort of prove his innocence? Will he be heard? What do you think about the timing of all of this, of Marilyn Mosby leaving office? And we've already even talked about, with this case, the current case that we're working on, this idea of how politics play a role in the lives of people that have profound ramifications. Any thoughts on timing, anything like that?
I think the fact that Mosby's about to leave office speaks volumes to the legitimacy of this. Right. If she was getting ready to go into an election and she was like, I'm going to do this to get everybody on my side. The fact that she's like, I've only got 4 months left to do the right thing and I'm going to do it, I think is pretty amazing. As far as what can Adnan do, I'm trusting in Mosby and her team right now. If you watch the press conference afterward, she said, we are not ready to declare Adnan innocent. And then she said very clearly, yet.
Right.
But we're waiting on DNA to come back. Right. And she made multiple statements indicating that this investigation is fully reopened and they are not going to stop until they find out who killed Hay, which is amazing.
Yeah. Well, she'd be lucky to come out on the right side of this. That's be quite an achievement for that office ever at all with anything that has ever touched this case. It would be amazing for her to be able to clean that up.
Mm-hmm. I love the stance of justice over convictions.
Yes.
I think that was huge.
Yes. Yep. Yes. I'm so glad you brought that up.
To be fair, I know Mosby's taken a lot of shit for some stuff she's done. There's a lot of politics that go on there. But I will say that, and I don't know much about all that, but I know that this is not like this new hashtag she put together for Adnan's case. She has had a track record of going back in, looking at bad convictions, and getting them overturned and getting them freed. And this justice over convictions has been her motto for a long time. And it's probably what cost her the election because she lost the primary. But she did stomp Theroux, thankfully. I just want to make that clear that this is not something that's new. That has been the way she has operated, which is extremely admirable.
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone needs a refresher post The Wire, We Own This City on HBO, which also has David Simon's DNA and is based off of a book that current Baltimore reporter did. It's a great resource for really hearing all the ways in which Baltimore is broken and all the ways in which it reflects the brokenness of cities everywhere. Almost done with everything I've got on this page. Real quick,
yeah. before you go on another question, yeah. I want to point out Samantha in the YouTube chat says, can we change the Constitution to reflect the idea of justice over conviction, please? The sad part, Samantha, is Constitution's already written that way.
Yeah.
And that's what's so sad about our criminal justice system. Nowhere in our criminal justice system does ever say anything about clearance rates and win rates for prosecutors. The entire thing is written on the idea of fairness and justice.
Yeah.
And what we need is prosecutors like Marilyn Mosby who are willing to actually do that job properly.
Yeah. Richard says, and this is where we come into the Serial thing. Eric and Richard both said, what do you think of all the vitriol being directed at Serial? Or is Serial getting too much attention when there are so many other places that more fully explored it, like Undisclosed, like You, et cetera?
It's a tough question. There is certainly the accurate statement that without Serial, none of us would be doing what we're doing. In Anand's case, would never have had the attention that it got. And so we should always, I think, forever be grateful for that. But that being said, I don't think that gives a free pass. I have serious issues with Sarah Koenig and Serial. It's not because she didn't, because people are like, well, she was a journalist and she was being neutral, but she was intentionally ambiguous. She had information that it seems as though she intentionally left out or intentionally skewed to make it more ambiguous, to make it more interesting. A lot of the trolling and the huge negative movement against Adnan also exists because of Serial, which that's going to happen anyway.
Right.
But it was made worse because things were intentionally left out, because things were intentionally, I think, misrepresented. And I also have a real there's some things that happened personally after Serial came out, when it made it very clear as that she was presenting herself as just having so much buy-in and really cared about this case. And it certainly seemed like that wasn't actually the case. She would only poke her head around when there was an opportunity to make another podcast episode. This one included, no one's heard a word from her about Adnan's case since 2016. And then the day's released, she's the first one sitting there with a microphone making an episode. I'll say this. I understand where the vitriol comes from. I also understand the people that are like, hey, without her and without Serial, I wouldn't even probably have this job, neither would Rabia. But the biggest thing that drives me crazy is when I've heard her talking about the case in the last several days where she's been interviewed and quoted and written, not one fucking word about the Undisclosed podcast.
Yes.
She said Rabia and others.
Have done a little deeper digging. I think she sort of put it that way.
Yeah, like the fact that she has not, because what she should be saying is after Serial, Rabia started her own podcast, Undisclosed, with these other two amazing lawyers, and they did an incredible deep dive and uncovered and proved things that I said, like the wrestling match was happening. They proved that that wasn't true, and that, you know, but they get no credit at all. To sum up what Rabia has done is, when Rabia and some others did some other digging is so fucking infuriating to me. So that's my position on it is, like, I certainly acknowledge we wouldn't be here today without her. But then again, this happened because of the work of the prosecutors, not because of a podcast.
100%. And my sort of statement about this was, I accept that in this reality, exactly the way it played out, and we have Serial to thank for it. Having spent the last almost 10 years closely watching Rabia and everything she's done, and watching Justin Brown, and watching all the people who fought and fought and fought, I am as sure as I can be without never knowing that this would have come out anyway. I really believe that. Sarah was like the first person that she reached out to. If Sarah had said no, I firmly believe someone else would have said yes. And they could have had pull somewhere else. It could have been, you could have gone to David Simon. It's a story about a wrongful Baltimore conviction that's fascinating and juicy. And I just think I appreciate Serial in this reality. I also feel like we would have had, like, I don't think Serial is what caused, period, full stop, the true crime podcast movement. I don't believe that for a second. I think there's something called the collective conscience. I think the reason that people were sucked into that is because it was prime for that to happen. And I believe it would have happened anyway. I just do. That doesn't mean I disrespect Serial, but I do think that hanging it all on that is such a misrepresentation of the fact that Robbie was never going to stop. And she would have found someone who would have told the story. We'll never know. But that's my belief.
She didn't tell it herself.
Absolutely.
Undisclosed could have happened even without Serial because she was desperate
to
keep fighting and to get this story into people's ears.
Right.
And one way or another, I don't believe for a second that Rabia would not have pushed this across the finish line one way or another.
And the good news is right now there was a wonderful outcome. So we can talk about this and hash it out and at the end of the day, Adnan is home with his family. So let's not lose sight of that, you know.
For sure.
That's all I have except for Kathy McElhaney's final question. Just thought I would tack this on at the end. She says, do you have anything to say to Nancy Grace?
No. I don't need to waste airspace. Good old Nancy. Listen. I found out my friend Sean T told me, cause he knows Nancy personally. He's like, no, she's actually really sweet. It's all an act. And when I went on her show, I realized that's 100% true. She is sweet when she's off camera and it is all an act. And that's what's so infuriating to me is because she's talking about cases that involve real people and real people's lives and for a shtick to make money, to just always pick a side like that is, she'll probably make another show about it now. About how, now I can't sleep because I realize I might have been wrong about something. Who knows?
Right.
But anyway, it's a great week, and we're making progress on our current case. I'm waiting right now. We're trying to get scheduled. There's a news outlet in Palm Springs that wants to do a story with me about our podcast and Robert and Christian's case. So hopefully if you're in the Palm Springs area, the Coachella Valley, you'll hear that and see that hopefully very soon. If that pans out, this weekend's episode, as I mentioned, I'm going to be going through. The plan is, and again, I haven't finished writing it yet. I'm still just researching all those pages of phone records that Teresa's put together. But the plan is to go through the phone records through the perspective of what can we figure out that Becky was doing. Where was Becky? Who was she with? What was she doing from about Tuesday through the time of the murders, through the phone records, and then we have that other interview with Javier that may be part of that, or I may put that out as a bonus. So that's what's coming this weekend. Thank you guys all so much for joining us and for being here on the YouTube Live. For those of you that were with us for the Zoom during Anon's thing, and this is a week where we can just take a deep breath and say, hot damn, you know, the work we're doing matters.
Yeah.
Bob, truly thank you for Monday's Zoom. From all of us. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
You're very welcome. And I'm glad that so many of you are able to. It was Jillian put it best when she said that was the therapy session that I didn't know I needed. And that's what it was for me, too.
For sure.
A real quick idea. Let's hang out together because you all are my people. And I wanted to be with you guys in that moment. We were able to do that. With that being said, let's end this and not make Kelly work too much longer on her vacation. She's in Ireland. She's on assignment in Ireland.
That's right. Love you, Kelly. Great work. I hope you're having a great time.
Drinking a Guinness while she's editing our podcast.
All right,
that's it. We'll see you guys next week. Love you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Kelly Behrens-Brink, and all music for the show was created by PutThemInASong.com.
Our follow-up logo was created by me, and all of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. You can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of createdintandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, truthandjusticepod.com, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kay Wood Yomnick, Ginger Viola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. For all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found in all forms @BobRuffTruth. Janet can be found @JanetVarney. And Zach is @Z2TheQ. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. As for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
All right.
That was a slow and sexy one. One, two, three. Okay. Bye.
Just me and you, Kelly. Just me and you.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
Look, I do so much better when they're not in the room. So much better when Janet's not, you know, mocking me. It's good. I was all by myself. This is the boring part where I'm just by myself talking to the camera all alone, just alone, crying, sobbing gently by myself.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You're muted.
What's happened? Nothing. Are you lonely?
I was just talking to Kelly.
Oh, hi, just, Kelly.
Someone has to listen to me. You know what kind of man child I am.
Right.